So today we are going to be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text 24. So this chapter is called as the son of Drona punished. The son of Drona punished. So text 24 goes as follows.
Saeva jiva lokasya.
Translation. And yet, though you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation, characterized by religion. And so on for the ultimate good of the conditioned souls. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, out of His causeless mercy, descends on the manifested world without being influenced by the material modes of nature. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, out of His causeless mercy, descends on the manifested world without being influenced by the material modes of nature. There are two important things here. One is that He descends out of His causeless mercy. Second thing is, when He descends out of His causeless mercy, He is still not affected by the three modes of material nature. He is eternally beyond the material manifestations. Not sometimes beyond the material manifestation. He is eternally beyond the material manifestations. He descends out of His causeless mercy only to reclaim the fallen souls who are captivated by the illusory energy. They are attacked by the material energy. The conditioned souls are attacked by the material energy and they want to enjoy her under false pretexts. Although, in essence, the living entity is unable to enjoy. One is eternally the servitor of the Lord, and when he forgets this position, he thinks of enjoying the material world, but factually, he is an illusion. The Lord descends to eradicate this false sense of enjoyment. And thus reclaim conditioned souls back to Godhead. That is the all-merciful nature of the Lord for the fallen souls. ओम अज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाखया चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदामयं ददाति स्वपदात्तिकं मुखां करोति वचलं पंगुं लंगायते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वंदे श्रीगुरुदिनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा 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 हरे हरे। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So this is the chapter 7 of Srimad Bhagavatam titled The Son of Drona Punished. Now what is the context of this chapter? That's very important to know. In chapter 4, Saunaka Rishi is posting a question to Sukadeva, to Suta Goswami. So as you are aware, Srimad Bhagavatam is assembly of conversations between so many different people who are conversing with one another at different points in time. So on one hand, we know that it's a conversation between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. But if we read Srimad Bhagavatam, there are conversations within conversations and conversations within those conversations and conversations within those conversations. So sometimes it's easy to lose focus on what's happening right now. Who is speaking to who and why who is speaking to who. So, what's happening is, as much as when Sukadeva Goswami was speaking to Maharaj Parikshit on the banks of the Ganges, Suta Goswami was taking all the essence of that message. And at a different point in time, Suta Goswami is addressing all the sages in Naimisaranya. And there, Saunaka Rishi is also sitting, and when he is reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam as he had heard it, at that time Saunaka Rishi is asking him a question. He says, can you tell us more about the birth and life of Maharaj Parikshit, the specific circumstances under which Maharaj Parikshit took birth? So it is the nature of Vaishnavas to learn and study and hear about the glories of other senior Vaishnavas. So in that context, this whole pastime of the son of Drona being punished is being spoken about by Suta Goswami. Now Srila Prabhupada says that Srimad Bhagavatam is Amala Purana. Srimad Bhagavatam is Paramahamsa Samhita. The Vedas deal with four subject matters: dharma, artha, kama and moksha. society, economic development, sense gratification and liberation. Whereas Srimad Bhagavatam is not colored or tinged with any of these subject matters. Srimad Bhagavatam is rasamalaya. It's completely above mundane subject matters. Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the paramahamsas. It is meant for the akinchanas. Akinchanas are those people who are completely free of material desires. Only a person who is in the akinchana bhav can really understand the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. However, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we have a copy of the Srimad Bhagavatam to lift us, though we sometimes tend to fall into the mode of ignorance, passion and goodness. But Srila Prabhupada's mercy, this Amala Purana is available to us. However, Srila Prabhupada, as much as he gave us the Srimad Bhagavatam, he has also instructed us that we must study the Srimad Bhagavatam under senior devotees. So Srimad Bhagavatam is not a subject matter for a freelance reading, or a reading like we read Robinson Crusoe or some other mundane novel. So Srimad Bhagavatam has to be studied under a senior devotee, under a bona fide Siksha Guru who is coming in disciplic succession. Srimad Bhagavatam has also to be studied in a particular sequence. Otherwise, there is a danger that we can directly jump into the 10th canto like the professional Bhagavatas do and can develop Sahajiya Bhav. What is Sahajiya Bhav? Sahajiya Bhav is the consciousness where a soul is taking Krishna for granted. Oh, okay, fine. You know, I know Krishna. My own Lala. Very prematurely, we will start dealing very informally with the Lord. That is called as Sahajiya consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada said that yes, the goal of human existence is to develop love for Krishna or Krishna Prema. That is the sadhya, that is a prayojana for all of us. That is the goal of all our sadhana. However, Srila Prabhupada said that it's very important for us to develop adequate reverence for the Lord before this reverence manifests into love by the practice of sadhana bhakti, eventually leading to raganuga bhakti, which means regulated devotional service, where we are more, our bhakti is more driven by the rules and regulations and injunctions of the scripture, which then migrates or graduates into the raganuga platform, where we can spontaneously worship the Lord. An example of that, if you have read The Journey Home by Radhanath Swami, you will find there is a personality by the name Ghanshyam Das. Have you heard about it? Ghanshyam Das, when Radhanath Swami Maharaj arrived in Vrindavan at the age of 19, he was pointed to Ghanshyam Das because he was checking, is there a pure devotee? He wanted to really meet a pure devotee, and he met Ghanshyam Baba. And when he met Ghanshyam Baba, Ghanshyam Baba used to dip sweet rice into the spoon. He used to take sweet rice, he used to feed it to his deities, Gopi Janavallabha, and he used to put it in the mouth of Radhanath Swami. Again, he'll dip the same spoon into that, he'll offer it to Gopi Janavallabha and give it to Radhanath Swami. So this is what was going on continuously. Now obviously this doesn't make sense from the viewpoint of Pancharatri Kividi, or Haribhakti Vilasa would never subscribe to this kind of a process of feeding. Because what we do is, when we offer bhoga to the Lord, we have to do achaman, and then we close the curtains, and then the Lord has his prasadam, then we ring the bell, then we pay obeisances, purify ourselves, take the plate, go in, mix it, sarira avidya jal gadendriya tahikal, and then we sit for prasadam. But what is this? Just taking the spoon, feeding it, and again you are putting, you know, whatever he has eaten, the same spoon is being put. Technically it is munchi to do that. But this is raganuga bhakti. Now, because we heard this pastime of Ghanshyam Baba, it doesn't mean that we can go home and start imitating that. So this imitating that prematurely is a symptom of Sahajiya Bhava, taking Krishna casually. So Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing that we must read the Srimad Bhagavatam right from the beginning, chapter by chapter, before we go into the 10th canto. That's important. Otherwise we would take Krishna and the deity to be a mundane personality. Tomorrow we may just go and hug Krishna on the altar. Without even being Brahmin initiated, we will go inside, right? Saying that, oh, I have developed pure love of Krishna. There are other things also which we could do if we have developed pure love of Krishna. For example, like not blaspheming devotees, not wasting time in prajalpa. There are many other things we can do, not necessarily go and hug the Lord directly. Right? We can also develop relationships with Vaishnavas, keeping aside our false ego. So many things we can do. Those are all symptoms of our love for Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada said it's very important to develop this mood of reverence before it graduates into love. Otherwise we can mistake Krishna for being a mundane personality. So in the previous sections leading up to this section in Srimad Bhagavatam, we have seen that in 1.1.1, the Lord is indirectly defined. In one sense is directly also defined, because the Bhagavatam starts with his name. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadasya Yataha. So the 1.1 starts with prayers to the Lord, but really it's not coming out. Towards the end of 1.1.1, the verse ends with the words Param Satyam Dhimahi. So it's more tending towards a similar mantra like the Gayatri mantra. Still the personality of God has not fully come out, though Prabhupada gives an elaborate explanation that this refers to the personality. As the Bhagavatam progresses from the absolute truth, the definition of the absolute truth, which is in 1.1.1, then it progresses towards the importance of devotional service. Therefore we see in second chapter we have so many verses that talk about the power of devotional service to give causeless knowledge as well as vairagya, jnana vairagya. Both will come automatically, it is said. So the whole chapter talks about devotional service. Then the chapter migrates to a discussion of Krishna Katha. Narad Muni comes, he sees Vyasadeva is despondent, then he tells Vyasadeva that you have forgotten to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what kind of literature have you written? And then Vyasadeva realizes, oh, I have missed this most important point. So the importance of describing the pastimes of the Lord is given. And that section culminates in the Atmarama verse. Not physically culminates, but in spirit it culminates in the Atmarama verse, which was a favorite verse of Lord Chaitanya. Atmaramascha munayo nirgranti nirgranta api urukrame kurvanti ahetukim bhaktim ittham bhuta gunahari. So the verse says that Krishna Katha or the topics of Krishna are relishable for anyone and everyone. The person may have full of material desires, the person may have no material desires, the person may be completely Atmaram. He may be already liberated. Atmaram is one who is completely satisfied with the self. Even to such a person, Krishna Katha is very relishable. So again, devotional service and Krishna Katha has come. The absolute truth has also been spoken of. So in this sequence, it's happening in the Bhagavatam. And the personality of Krishna is now making entry into the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Gurujan Prabhu writes in Unveiling the Lotus Feet, which is his commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, that this is the entry of Lord Krishna. Like in a Bollywood movie or a Hollywood movie, the hero is entering like that. So this is the entry point where Lord Krishna is coming on a chariot. In Bhagavad Gita he is already entered, but in Bhagavatam this is the way that he is making his entry. Now there is a very clear similarity between the entry of the Lord in Bhagavad Gita and the entry of the Lord in Srimad Bhagavatam. There also there is a battlefield and Arjuna is fighting a battle and there is so much of confusion in his mind what to do, and Lord Krishna comes as his, not only as his guru but also as his protector. And here also we see that in this verse that is happening. So what's happened? What's leading up to this verse? In this section, Bhima has nearly killed Duryodhan by hitting him on the thigh. Right? And Duryodhan has fallen and he is about to leave his body. Ashwatthama feels, who was on the Kaurava side, he feels that he has been wronged. He feels that his father was not killed with integrity on the battlefield. Right? So he is having seething rage against the Pandavas, and in that moment of anger he goes to the tent, to the camp where the Pandavas are residing, and he goes and beheads all the 5 children of the Pandavas. And then after beheading, he is racing back from that place. And when the Pandavas find out that this has happened, then Draupadi starts crying, because obviously she has lost her 5 children. And there is no greater loss for a mother in this world than the loss of one's own child. So you can imagine, 5 children she has lost. You can imagine the state of mind, any mother can imagine. Even fathers can imagine, mothers more. And in that state, then Arjuna is promising Draupadi that I will go and get the head of Ashwatthama for you. And in that fit of rage, then Arjuna is racing towards Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama's chariot is ahead. Arjuna is fast catching up with him. Ashwatthama is going faster and faster, But at some point in time, his horses are tired. And then he believes that no, there is no way now that I can run faster than Arjuna can catch me. So therefore, he stops and then he sees no other, he sees his imminent death. Now when he sees his imminent death, how does he react? Immediately, he remembers that he has got a Brahmastra. He removes the Brahmastra. Prabhupada says Brahmastra is the modern definition of Brahmastra is nuclear weapon. So he removes the Brahmastra and he immediately, without thinking, fires it at Arjuna. Now why is it important to think before releasing a Brahmastra? Because one has to know how to bring back the Brahmastra. And Ashwatthama has no knowledge of how to bring back this Brahmastra. So he's released something which he can't control. It's just like, for example, today the terrorists, many of them are in Pakistan, it is said, and many of them are holding, there's a serious risk that they can get control of the nuclear weapons and they may not know how to handle them. So once they release it, then the whole world is destroyed. Right? So that is the kind of situation that Ashwatthama is creating now. He doesn't know how to retract it, but he releases it in his own fit of rage. Brahmastra has got the personal potency of Lord Brahma. And it is said in the Vedas that when a Brahmastra is released, it has to do its job and only then it can come back. So Brahmastra has been released. Now as the Brahmastra is released, there is glaring light. There is a big, big effulgence because of the heat and light generated by the Brahmastra. It's a blinding light. And Brahmastra has been released and Arjuna is standing there. And now Arjuna is seeing his imminent death. Few minutes back, Ashwatthama was seeing his death. And how did he respond? By releasing the Brahmastra. And now that Arjuna is facing the Brahmastra, and he knows Brahmastra has to do its job, now he is facing imminent death. But what is Arjuna's reaction to this?
He prays to Krishna.
The first thing that a devotee does, that's the difference between the reaction of a non-devotee when faced with a calamity, and the reaction of a devotee when faced with a calamity. Both are facing life-threatening situations. One has reacted in an offensive mentality. One immediately takes shelter of the Lord. And under the shelter of the Lord, then he does whatever that he has to do. So this chapter has got many, many... this verse carries many, many lessons. Predominantly, it carries three or four important lessons. The first lesson is that, as the verse says, Arjuna is praying to Lord Krishna. And as a part of his prayers, what does he say? The first thing that he says is that, "Oh my dear Lord, you are the supreme protector. You are the all-powerful because you are beyond this material energy." At the end of the day, Brahmastra is also a product of the material energy, right? So Arjuna knows that Krishna is above the material energy. So if anyone can save from the Brahmastra, that personality has to be above the material energy. He has to be the controller of controllers. He has to be the supreme controller. So immediately he starts praying to Brahma. So the first thing which we understand here is that the Lord is transcendental to the three modes of material nature. The second thing which we understand is from Prabhupada's purport, where Prabhupada is emphasizing that the Lord has got a specific reason for his descent. The Lord's birth is not to be compared with the birth and death of the conditioned souls. They are not in the same category. The Lord descends for specific purposes because he is Karuna Sindhu. The third thing which we understand is Arjuna's mood of spontaneous surrender when faced with a crisis. There is yet another reasoning which Bhurijan Prabhu gives in his purports that is very interesting to know. He says that after Arjuna finishes these prayers, which is maybe 2-3 verses down the line, then Lord Krishna starts speaking. So here Arjuna is faced with death. When someone is faced with death, that person, what's the first help that person needs? If someone is facing death, what will he need? First, you have to save him, right? At that time, we can't go with the Bhagavad Gita and say that, you are not this body, you are the soul, look, you have fallen down because of independent nature, whatever, whatever. That person doesn't need that. First you save his body, then you save his soul. That's a sequence of preaching. So Lord Krishna is teaching all of us. Three verses down the line, the first thing that Lord Krishna tells him is that, Arjuna, you release your Brahmastra. Because only one Brahmastra can counter another Brahmastra. So first thing is that first let's stop this nuisance of Brahmastra first. Right? And then we will start talking what to do. Right? So he didn't start teaching Arjuna the philosophy of Krishna consciousness right away. First he gives him the technique by which he can save his body, and then Krishna, there's a whole pastime around it. How Krishna then gives the whole Vedic philosophy and the premise of reasoning, the way that arguments are put forth. It's very interesting, but that will come later in the chapter. So there are so many learnings for us in this section. So the first one is Lord is transcendental to the material energy. Now this verse directly hits at the Mayavadi philosophy. Now what is Mayavadi philosophy? Many times we talk about Mayavadi philosophy, but do we really understand what is this Mayavadi philosophy? The danger of this Mayavadi philosophy is that it is almost similar to what Krishna conscious philosophy is about. It's almost similar. It's like an aircraft is taking, two aircrafts are leaving. If you ask the passengers, where are you going? He'll say, I'm going in this aircraft. Where are you going? I'm going in that aircraft. But both of them are going to US. Right? That's a similarity. If you ask both of them, they'll say, yeah, we are going to California. They're going to US and they're going to California. Amazing. So immediately we start thinking that both of them are going to the same place. But one flight may land in Los Angeles and one flight may land in San Francisco. Both are in California. The destinations are still different. So, for quite an extent, the Mayavadi philosophy is very similar to Krishna conscious philosophy. Right? But after that, there are deviations, and those deviations are really very significant. Because at the end of the day, San Francisco is a different place than Los Angeles. Right? We land up in different destinations. So we have to understand these similarities and these differences very carefully. So the Mayavadi philosophy, if you hear, they will agree that yes, we are not this body, we are the soul. They'll agree. There is no debate over there. Right? Very good, very good. You are also understanding correctly, they will say. Right? You are the body, you are not the soul. Second thing, you are made of spirit and not made of matter. Yes, there is an agreement between Mayavadi and us. The goal of life is liberation. Yes. Mayavadi also agrees. We also agree. The soul has to get out of the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. A conditioned soul should not be foolish enough to just perform mundane worldly activities so that it is trapped. Yes. There is an agreement. Here also there is an agreement with the Mayavadi. One should follow four regulative principles. Yes. Mayavadi also agrees to this. Right? And one should do mantra meditation. Yes, Mayavadi also agrees to that. But now the difference starts. What is the mantra which a Mayavadi will chant? And what do we chant? We chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Ram, Hare Hare. Some others in the Vaishnava Sampradaya may say, no, I don't want to chant Hare Krishna. I'll chant, Om Namo Narayanaya. Fair enough. Ramanujacharya said that. That's also bona fide. Somebody may say, no, I'll chant, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That's also fine. But this is where the difference comes. The Mayavadis will say, hang on, why can't I simply chant, Om? And that's where the difference comes. Why do I have to chant anything after that? Because Om is the infinite absolute truth. That's where the difference comes. That's where now you are not landing, the flight is now taking to San Francisco and not going to Los Angeles now. Thus far the flight was following the same flight path. But now there is a difference. Right? So, we need to understand the differences. Otherwise we can land up in trouble and we can get disturbed by this philosophy and we can ruin our spiritual life. Because what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Mayavadi Bhashya Sunile Haya Sarvanash. He said, if you hear even Mayavadi philosophy, your devotional life will go for a toss. Right? In fact, he went to the extent of saying that if you see a Mayavadi, what should you do?
Yeah, you should kill him first. If you can't kill him first, then you should kill yourself. Of course, we don't want to do that. Right? But this is the seriousness. So it's very important for us to understand. So we don't want to kill Mayavadis, but we want to kill the ignorance of the Mayavadis. Even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Jagai Madai did whatever they did, Mahaprabhu raised the Sudarshan Chakra. And then Lord Nityananda reminded him, you have not come into this material world to kill demons with your Sudarshan Chakra. We are not going to kill the demons the way that you did in your Krishna Leela. We are going to kill the demonic tendency within people. So, Srila Prabhupada also killed the demonic tendency of the Mayavadis through his purports. If you take any section of Srimad Bhagavatam, right from Canto 1 to Canto 11 and Bhagavad Gita and any book, Srila Prabhupada is always smashing the Mayavadis. Why? Because Srila Prabhupada knew that this philosophy is very similar to ours. And there is a subtle difference. So Srila Prabhupada really wanted to protect us from that. Right? And in this purport also, again, Srila Prabhupada is writing that Lord Krishna is beyond the three modes of material nature. Let's try and understand what is the difference now. So the Mayavadis say that yes, we are all spirit soul. Yes, we are not this material body. But they give an analogy which is called as Ghat Akash Pat Akash. Now what is the Ghat Akash Pat Akash? Ghat means a pot. In Sanskrit it said Gadam, a pot. Ghat Akash. So they say that if you place a pot which does not have anything, just an empty pot, then what is inside the empty pot? There is air. What is outside the empty pot? There is air. Right? So he says that whatever is inside is same as whatever is outside. There is no difference. Just that what is inside is enclosed in a clay pot. But the clay pot is not the reality. That which is inside is the reality, because the reality is that what is outside. And that what is outside is that what is inside. So Ghat Akash Pat Akash. So when the pot is there, whatever is inside is the reality. And when the pot breaks, then ultimately it just merges with the reality outside. Right? So that is their philosophy. Which means that, yes, my dear, you are soul. But later on, you will understand that you are not ordinary soul. You are the Supreme Soul. You are Bhagavan. That is the problem. Here and there it goes for a task. Right? Everything is quiet here. So then you may ask, but if I am Bhagavan, then why am I struggling in this material world?
That's because you have forgotten that you are Bhagavan. When you are reminded of the fact that you are Bhagavan, then you will be in control of the modes of material nature.
Now the question to be asked to Mayavadi is, if I am Bhagavan and if the three modes of material nature make me forget that I am Bhagavan, then who is more powerful? The three modes of material nature are more powerful. Then the question you need to ask them is, who created the three modes of material nature? And then there is no answer to that. They say, no, everything is Brahman. Everything has come from the infinite absolute. Right? Then you may ask, then who is God? Does God have personality or he does not have personality? So then the Mayavadi will tell you that no, God has got no personality. It's all Brahman. Brahman is the same as God. God doesn't have any form. Then you will say, then who was Krishna and Rama? Rupa told me that Krishna is God. And you are telling me Brahman is God. They will say, you fool. It's the same thing. That infinite, when it takes a material form, that is Krishna, that is Rama. Because we are fools. We don't understand, we cannot conceive of an impersonal God. Therefore, Brahman very kindly descends, it interacts with the three modes of material nature and takes a form as mundane personalities. So Krishna, Rama, Jagannath Ramdas, all one. All are one. You are Krishna, you are Rama. You are which God? Narasimha Dev? Same thing. If you decide, you can come out of the pillar right now. That is what Mayavadi is telling. Only you have to remember that you are Lord Narasimha Dev. Right? in Bombay, I struggle to get out even of a local train. What can I, what to speak of coming out of a pillar? There's a struggle to get inside and come out. It's not easy doing that. Right? But this is what the Mayavadi says. This is how it is, useless philosophy. Right? There is no sense in that. So Prabhupada smashes that philosophy in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's a very interesting conversation. Arjuna is lamenting, oh, I will not kill these people. My bow is shivering, my lips are quivering, whatever. All that lamentation he finishes. And then Krishna is just observing. And then he says, okay, enough. Now I'll start speaking. And then he first says that, Arjuna, you are a fool. You are speaking like a fool now. Why? Krishna is saying, first you have to understand that I have already killed all these people. So you are not going to kill them, so don't worry about it. I have already killed all of them. You are just nimitta matra. You are just instrument. And don't think that you are killing. You cannot kill anyone. You cannot kill Bhishma because Bhishma is not his body. You cannot kill Drona because he is not his body. So there is nobody that is getting killed on the battlefield anyway. And then he gives the famous verse, never was a time when you did not exist, I did not exist, nor any of these people on the battlefield, never was a time that they did not exist, and never will there be a time when they will cease to exist. He says that. Which means what? What words did Krishna use? Never was a time when you did not exist. Never was a time when I did not exist. Now where does in English the word you and I come from? The word you and I is applicable only when there is individuality. And that's what Prabhupada writes. He smashes in that purport. He writes that these Mayavadis, they try to kill the individuality of the person. If everything was one, then why Krishna would have said that never was a time that you will not exist or I will not exist. And never will be there a time when we will cease to exist. So Krishna is saying that this individuality was always there, is there right now, and will always be there in future also. If in future all of us were to merge into Bhagwan and everyone becomes that infinite, impersonal, absolute truth, then why would Krishna say that in future you will continue to exist as an individual? Why would he have said that? So Srila Prabhupada very clearly points out that in Bhagavad Gita, 2nd chapter, 12th verse. Right? And then Prabhupada further smashes the Mayavadis. He says that even if the Mayavadis' argument is that no, Lord Krishna says that the individuality mentioned here is the state of being conditioned. Because the Mayavadis are saying that yes, your individuality only arises when the infinite impersonal comes in contact with the three modes of material nature. That leads to individuality. Prabhupada says even if they were speaking about that individuality, then that means who is speaking the Bhagavad Gita? Krishna is speaking about that individuality. That means that Krishna is no different than an ordinary conditioned soul. And then Prabhupada says, if Krishna then is an ordinary conditioned soul, then what relevance does Bhagavad Gita have? There is no relevance. We should never read the Bhagavad Gita. Then even the Mayavadi should not read the Bhagavad Gita. Right? Whereas they are reading Bhagavad Gita also. Then nobody should read Bhagavad Gita. Why? Because a conditioned soul has got four defects. Making mistakes, being under illusion, cheating propensity, senses are imperfect. Now if a conditioned soul then writes a scripture or is speaking Bhagavad Gita in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, then there is no relevance to anything that Krishna has said at the end of the day. So even the Mayavadi interpretation is also bogus because they are also talking about Bhagavad Gita only. So whichever way you see this argument, the Mayavadis are defeated. By simple logic and reasoning. Right? Also Prabhupada says, why will Krishna, what was the earlier verse Krishna is speaking in Bhagavad Gita? He is saying, Arjuna, you are lamenting like a fool. You are not the body, you are the soul. Dehinosmin yata dehe kaumaram yamanam jara tata dehantara praptit dehastatra namuyati. He is telling that the embodied soul passes through old age, whatever, and then it ends at death. And Krishna is clearly telling, don't lament because the soul is different and the body is different. Right? Then, why will Krishna ever talk about the soul and the body if he was himself conditioned? Why would he have ever spoken that philosophy to him at the end of the day? So Prabhupada gives all these arguments. So this is the way that the Mayavadis have to be defeated. So it's very, we have to be very, very careful about this Mayavadi philosophy that everybody is God at the end of the day. Now, these Mayavadis also have very unique bhajans, right? So one of their bhajans, which I heard in one of my godbrother Gaurang Prabhu's lecture, he said that Mayavadis have a famous bhajan, which he says that it's played in Arya Samaj or somewhere. It says, Nirakar Tomara Charana Dekhi, which means Nirakar, you, their bhajan is like that. You who doesn't have a form, please unveil your lotus feet. Now, how can something, you know, which doesn't have form have a lotus feet? There is no question of feet. There is no hands and legs to something which anyway doesn't have a form. So their bhajan is meaningless. It's self-defeating. They don't know what they are talking about, right? But then they will still do deity worship. But when we do deity worship, they will come and tell you, why you are doing deity worship? Don't you understand that this is idol? This is idol worship. Right? But when you ask them, in your Arya Samaj, in your Brahmo Samaj or whatever, you are also doing idol worship, they'll say, you fool, you don't understand. Because you are foolish, because you need some form to worship, then we worship that. By worshipping the form, eventually your foolish mind will understand that you are the formless and you are the deity. That is their logic. Which means, who is doing aarti to who? I am doing aarti to myself. Then why to do this way? Just do this way. And sing samsara ravana and everything we can sing. This is nonsense philosophy. Absolute nonsense. If you go deep into it, we'll start laughing, which is what we are doing now. Right? We have to be very careful. In fact, in Gujarat, there is one famous personality. I will not name, but he's got a very nice beard. That's why I like it. That's all I like about him. His dadi, like, with his white beard, he comes and speaks. Oh, oh, you fools. All is one. You are God. You are also God. Everybody is like, because foolish people have not read the scriptures. In India, nobody has time outside of T20 and no test match cricket. Who has time? And then otherwise we are all slogging in office till 10:30, 11 o'clock. So nobody has time. So when something like that is spoken, the voice sounds very soothing. Though the philosophy may be nonsense, garbage the person must be speaking. But garbage is being given very nicely. Right? So what this personality does, he speaks all this om and you are God, I am God. And on Janmashtami day, he did something which is amazing. You can't imagine doing that. They organized the crane. You know what's a crane, right? You know, the construction workers, they organized that. So he sat on the crane, he went on top of the crane, and from there, he was throwing Amul butter to everyone. On Janmashtami. Because he is Krishna, so he is throwing, he is distributing butter to everyone. So this kind of nonsense is going on, right? So there is no end. So the Mayavadi also has to be saved. And his followers also have to be saved. So it is our duty to really study Srila Prabhupada's purport scrutinizingly, so that then, instead of getting angry at the people who talk Mayavadi philosophy, we can logically cut their arguments one by one. So that is very important. So sections like this, or whenever purports like this come across in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to really study them scrutinizingly. Sometimes what happens, our tendency is that, oh, Prabhupada again smashing the Mayavadis. Okay, let me go to the next section. I have heard this before. Mayavadis are rascals. Yes, I know. So skip this section and go to the next section where something more is given that I don't know. But no, we have to know how to smash Mayavadis. So, recently we did a program in Bendigo. And in Bendigo we had one of the one famous person from the from one of the impersonal sects. She was a brahmacharini. She is very well known in Victoria. She was also there incidentally in the class. So obviously, you know, we took an opportunity to talk about Mayavadi philosophy, seeing that a brahmacharini from the impersonalistic philosophy was sitting there. So so during the class, there was a question, is God impersonal or personal? Now usually people put this argument that how can you people restrict God into a form? Can God be restricted? Can anyone restrict God? No. So they say that your form is restrictive in its nature. Now, how do you argue with that? Because God cannot be put under a specific dimensions, they say. And you people are giving specific dimensions to the Lord. And you are giving, you are telling that Krishna is 16 years old, his height was this much, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is having, you know, eight, how much of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's hands were, how long? Anyone knows? I forgot. Okay. I'm very poor at that statistics. But yes, so you are talking all this, but you are restricting God. You can't restrict God to a dimension. Dimension, by its very nature, is restrictive. Now, how do we argue with that? So, to this question, we have to really understand. We give an example of set theory in mathematics. In mathematics, many of you might have done set theory, right? A set theory has got a universal set and a set, it's got a subset. So let's say a set theory says a set of natural numbers, which is set A, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, ... That is a set of natural numbers. Now, if you take a subset from that, let's call it as A dash, if you like, then that subset can be 1, 2, 3, that's all. Full stop. Right? Now, if you pick up, are you following me thus far? Or have I confused you? I don't want to see teach set theory here. But A has got all natural numbers, 1 to infinity, and set A dash, which is a subset of that, has only got 3 numbers, 1, 2, 3. Now, if you pick up something from the subset, let's pick up the number 2. Now, is it part of the universal set or not? Yes, it is part of the universal set. Can there be something in the subset which is not there in the universal set? Mathematically. So, you agree? There cannot be anything in the subset which is not part of the universal set. So, we told them that the universal set, if you like A, you can write form, comma, formless. And then the subset then becomes what? Formless. So we told them that you are restricting. You are the subset. We are the universal set. Because we say, Prabhupada says that God is formless as well as has a form. But it's you people who are restricting that he cannot have a form. And then we told them that when you can have a form, when I can have a form, then how can that universal set not have something which we have? Because you are also saying that we are subsets. You are saying that we are Brahman. We are part and parcels of that supreme absolute. If that supreme absolute, then how can the subset which is we have something which that superset cannot have? And then they shut up. So we really have to smash them logically. You have to understand where they are coming from. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 4 verses which are given. The Chatushloki verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Just like in Bhagavad Gita also we have Chatushloki, right? Aham Sarvase Prabhu, and there are 4 verses which come. Like that. In Srimad Bhagavatam also, in the, the second canto, 9th chapter, the Chatushloki, correct? Second canto, 9th chapter, around 33 verse or something, yeah. We studied in Bhakti Vaibhava. Yeah. So, the verse says, the first verse itself, Lord Krishna is saying, Aham evasam eva agre, nanyat sad asad param, emam tvai nanya tetoshti, something like that. I can't remember that verse, but, not evam tvai nanya. Something else. But aham evasam agre. The important point here is Lord Krishna is saying in the translation that before this whole cosmic manifestation was created, that which existed was me. After everything is annihilated, that which will remain is me. Now the Mayavadi's representation to this. Oh, Krishna is talking about Brahman. Everything, he's talking about the self. If you take a Mayavadi's Bhagavad Gita commentary, what is the meaning of aham? Prabhupada says aham is who? Who is speaking? Suppose Devamrit Swami usually gives this example. He says, if I ask you, I want water, then if you get water and place it somewhere there, or if you go out and you drink water, Maharaj is asking, can you bring me some fruit juice? Yes, Maharaj, sure. Where is my fruit juice? Maharaj, I have already had it. But I have fruit juice. No, Maharaj, you and I are one. Same thing. All one. So I only had Mahaprasada. Why to give you anything? Right? This is nonsense. Right? So, aham evasam evasam. So Lord says that after everything is finished, that which remains is me. Now Mayavadi interprets this word I everywhere as the self.
They will say, after everything is annihilated, that which will remain is the self. Right? Surrender unto me. Surrender unto self. Right? Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam raja. Mam means what? Krishna is saying me. Mayavadi says mam means the self. Surrender to the self. Surrender to yourself. Right? Take shelter of yourself. That's what we have been doing. That's why the whole problem is there. Because we are taking shelter of our own mind and senses. Prabhupada writes. Right? So Mayavadis may still interpret this Bhagavatam like that. They say that after everything is annihilated, that which remains is still that infinite absolute which is Brahman. Now that is where Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I can't remember which verse it is. Give me a minute. I've used a small font and I'm struggling with it myself now. Yes. So Lord Krishna tells in 14th chapter, 27th verse. That is a star verse. That is enough to defeat Mayavadis. He says, Brahmano hi pratishta aham. So what does Lord say? I am the basis of Brahman. That is enough. Clearly Lord is saying now. So don't talk about the self. Now they cannot say that the self is the basis of Brahman. They will contradict themselves if they say that. Right? The self is the basis of Brahman. What does it mean? When they are saying that the self is non-different from Brahman, how can the self then be the basis of Brahman? Because they are the same thing. Right? I cannot say I am the basis of myself. It's as ridiculous as saying that. So therefore, that verse is important. 14.27. Lord says that I am the basis of Brahman. So now if we understand this truth, then we understand that Lord Krishna is saying, Aham sarvasya prabhava mattaha sarvam pravartate. From me comes Brahman. I am the basis of Brahman. Brahman is nothing else but the effulgence which is coming out of my body. I am not a product of Brahman, but Brahman is the effulgence. I am the source of Brahman, or I am the Parabrahman. Right? When that Brahman effulgence comes in contact with material substance. Now there is a material substance called as Pradhan. Now this is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. There is a material substance. So that explains how all of us were produced. How all our bodies were produced. Someone can say your body is made up of earth, water, fire, air, ether. But someone can ask where did earth, water, fire, air, ether come from? So if you go back, it is written in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the original cosmic substance is called as Pradhan. So when Lord Krishna glances at that Pradhan through the medium of Vishnu, when Mahavishnu glances at that Pradhan, then he energizes or activates that Pradhan. The Pradhan is a substance which is neither spiritual nor entirely material. So it's at a threshold, if you like. So when the Lord glances at the Pradhan, then that Pradhan gets activated and becomes Mahat Tattva. And from that Mahat Tattva, the interaction of the various elements of Mahat Tattva, which is the false ego, with the three modes of material nature, when they interact, then everything in this material world is formed. So that Pradhan is the original cosmic substance. And the Pradhan comes from where? It comes from Brahman. Brahman is called as Nirguna Brahman. Because Nirguna means what? That which doesn't have any material qualities. So, that Pradhan is called as Saguna Brahman. This is what Bhurijan Prabhu writes in Unveiling the Lotus Feet. Saguna means what? Now there is some qualities that is coming in that Brahman. Am I clear or am I confusing now? Is it okay so far? Yeah. So, the essential point, even if we don't understand all these technicalities, it is enough to understand that Lord Krishna is the source of Brahman. Brahman is the source of Pradhan. Pradhan is the source of Mahat Tattva. And Mahat Tattva is the source of our bodies. What about our souls? That Krishna has already said in the Bhagavad Gita, Mamaiva Amsha Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. He has already said that. He said your soul is nothing but a part and parcel of my soul. So our soul has also come from Krishna, which is the superior energy, and our body has come from a product of his inferior energy, which is Pradhan and Mahat Tattva. Now this knowledge, we have to give it to the Mayavadis. If we give this knowledge to them, that's it. Then they don't have any arguments. They cannot produce anything.
Prabhupada says, Mayavadis do not have access to Srimad Bhagavatam. They cannot appreciate. Now you may say that fine, but what do Mayavadis attain at the end of the day? So Srila Prabhupada says, Mayavadis may put so many arguments. They may even win arguments against devotees, but at the end of the day, they'll be bored. They'll be bored. What did we do this morning? We came to the temple. We chanted nicely, we danced. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. We saw the beautiful form of the deities. We are enjoying with the Lord in the mood of the gopis. What does Mayavadi do? He sits in one corner and meditates on the impersonal, infinite, existential absolute. Whatever that is. Now if we gave you a choice, what would you like? Would you like to dance in kirtan and have a nice prasadam after that? Or would you like to sit in a corner and meditate on that which you don't know what you are meditating on? So Mayavadis become bored. Yes, by following the four regulative principles and following celibacy, following austerity, they will go beyond the modes of material nature. Yes, they will. That's why Prabhupada calls Mayavadis also as transcendentalists. Transcendental, the word means that anything beyond the modes of material nature. So Mayavadis are also transcendentalists. But that liberation which the Mayavadi gets is temporary. They will come out of the modes of material nature. They will attain that Brahman, but they wouldn't know what to do in that Brahman. It's just like a person who is inside the jail. He is very unhappy in jail, right? He is being beaten in the jail. There are mosquitoes in the jail. There is no ghee they put in the chapati. Nothing is happening there. He is given stale food to eat. One day finally, he is released from the jail. But all of us are also sitting outside the jail. Are we jumping up and down? Oh, I am not in jail. I am not in jail. We also go through loneliness. Devotees of course don't. But when we were non-devotees, that time also we were outside the jail. I don't know. Maybe. At least I was outside the jail. So we were not jumping up and down. I am not in jail. So not being in jail doesn't mean absolute happiness will come. Absolute happiness will come only with relationships of love. Only when there is loving relationships, which is eternal, will happiness come. Happiness comes only through satisfaction of the soul. And Srila Prabhupada says, the soul cannot be satisfied if it's in an artificial situation of being separated from the super soul. Just like the hand, if it is severed from the body, will not get any nourishment. For some time it may move here and there. But after that, because it's disconnected, it will stop. Right? So like that. So the Mayavadis don't know what to do after attaining Brahman. So they feel bored. There is no activity. A soul always needs activity. There is no activity in Brahman. So bang, they fall down again into this material world. And when they fall down again into this material world, they appear as big, big personalities. They appear as jnanis. Because they have the knowledge that we are not the body, we are the soul. And many people sit and hear lectures from these jnanis. Right? But Prabhupada has smashed all this ignorance for us. He has given us the exposure to the highest philosophy. That is why Lord Krishna says, which is that verse where no lamentation, no hankering in Brahman, na sochati na kankshati. Which is that first line? Brahma bhuta prasannatma na sochati na kankshati sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. Why Krishna would have told that in Srimad, in Bhagavad Gita? He says, after you attain the platform of Brahman, from that platform of Brahman, then you attain my bhakti. If Brahman was the absolute in this world, why Lord Krishna would have spoken that there is something higher than Brahman? Why the Srimad Bhagavatam would have said, Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. Where Prabhupada writes, learned transcendentalists understand the absolute truth in three phases. Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. So, from this verse, we really have to understand that the Mayavadi philosophy is bogus and we really have to understand the true nature of Krishna. Prabhupada also writes that Krishna is Karuna Sindhu. That is why Krishna comes in so many avatars. He came as Matsya Avatara to restore the Vedas. He came as Kurma Avatara just to ensure that his devotees are protected. So he gave the transcendental nectar, the immortal nectar to the Devas by tricking the Asuras. So Krishna is partial in that sense towards his devotees. Then he came as Varaha to save the earth when the earth was down under. Now what is Varaha incarnation? Varaha incarnation is the form of a boar. A boar is not a very clean animal. Prabhupada writes in the purport. People run away. Like for example, in India when you go, here you don't, Australia you don't see that much. But in India if you go, the pigs are coming out of the gutter. Right? They are all soiled with the dirty water. No? And then what happens? The pig does like this. It does its head like that. Sometimes dogs also do like that. And when it does like that, then what's happening? The water, other people say, oh my God. No. Just stay away from here. Right? And then water falls on us, it will sting the whole day. Right? But Lord Krishna came as a hog. As a boar, sorry. He came as a boar. And then Lord Krishna is doing the same activity. He is doing this way. And all the water is coming out. And who is coming there? The Devi Devatas, the demigods are saying, we want a drop of that water. Why will they do that? Which means, when the Lord takes a form, that form is not a material form. Which boar can go and pick up the earth? Do you know of any boar in this world which can pick up the earth? Do you know of any fish which can restore the Vedas? Isn't it? It's ridiculous, right? So the Lord has got all these forms. Which, is there a creature which is half man, half lion in this world? It doesn't exist. So the Lord's forms are transcendental. That's why the Lord gives in Bhagavad Gita the famous verse, Janma Karma Cha Me Divyam. My appearance is transcendental to this material nature. So don't compare me to an ordinary conditioned soul. Final point is Arjuna. The mood of Arjuna. What is the mood of Arjuna? The mood of Arjuna is when he is faced with danger, he immediately takes shelter of the Lord. I was hearing a recent class by my godbrother Govind Prabhu, who is a senior brahmachari in Chopati temple. And I'll just leave the class with this one point. Govind Prabhu was saying a very beautiful point. He was saying, the reason why all of us are miserable as devotees also, sometimes we get into problems in our relationship, is because we fall in love with the concept of righteousness. We sometimes tend to seek justice from the Lord. We say, oh my dear Lord, I was so good to her. I was so good to him. But this is what she did to me. This is what this devotee did to me. It's not correct. I behaved properly with this devotee, but this devotee is not behaving properly with me. I did so much for this devotee, but this devotee doesn't have gratitude towards me and not even saying Haripol when I enter the temple. So sometimes even within Vaishnava relationships, we can have all this trouble. So he said in the lecture that this is because we fall in love with our own righteousness. When faced with the situation, we try to take shelter of all those things that we have done right with devotees and expect all those right things to deliver reciprocation to us. When we think like that, then what we are doing? We are moving from the mercy platform of Krishna to getting the results of our own actions from our own efforts. Does it make sense? So he says, don't fall in love with your righteousness. Don't seek justice from the Lord. The moment we seek justice from Krishna, we lose Krishna. But the moment we take shelter of Krishna, we get Krishna. This is a very important point that he's mentioning. So when we are faced with any difficult situation, when we feel that even devotees have been unfair to us, then, instead of lamenting to the Lord, Lord, I am also following four regulative principles. I am also coming for Mangalarti. I am chanting, why this, why that? Instead of saying that, pray to the Lord, saying that, yes, Lord, I think you are trying to teach me something, but Lord, please give me your mercy so I can sail through it. So don't seek justice. Always seek mercy of the Lord. And that's what we see Arjuna also doing. When faced with the danger, immediately he started glorifying the Supreme Lord. So instead of seeking justice from the Lord, oh my dear Lord, I did not kill them, their sons. So, you know, he is not lamenting. Or, I killed them only because you told me so. Or, this is, you remember that, you know, Draupadi's robes, modesty was being dishonored, right? Her modesty was being outraged. So, he didn't start lamenting about all these things and seeking justice. Immediately, when faced with situation, he just started glorifying the Lord. And that's the mood we should always have when faced with difficulty. So, I'll end the class here. Are there any questions or comments?
Even in the devotional service, sometimes we do have a personal opinion with Krishna. We just sort of do the job and not try to offer or develop a loving relationship with the service. So I was just wondering, how does that come about and how do we counteract, how do we help the good?
You know the answer better than I do, but still, for my own purification, I'll answer. So Srila Prabhupada says that we have to constantly hear the glories of the Lord. Impersonalism comes to a devotee when we develop Sahajiya Bhava, as we were discussing in the early part of the class, right? We take Krishna for granted. I know that I am also a victim of that. So I also have that problem. For example, there are deities in our house, Gaurnitya deities. But I'm sometimes thinking that when Vedvyas Priya Maharaj came to our house and installed the deities, we were so ecstatic. Gaurnitya came to our house, come everybody, let's do nice kirtan. And we did kirtan until 11:30 in the night. We did kirtan in my house when Vedvyas Priya Maharaj installed the Gaurnitya deities. But sometimes when I come from work and then I'm sitting down, suddenly I look at the Gaurnitya deities. I said, were you the one who I welcomed with such pomp and grandeur? And now what do I do? Namo Mahavadanaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishna Ayakta Chaitanya Amne Gaurati Sanama Padayate Krishna Prabhupada and take the tram, go to office, give the prasad, bhoga to the Lord. Let's finish, take immediately, and then mix it because I have missed my tram. So that's the kind of attitude we are having. This is because constant hearing is not there. Only when we are constantly hearing, we will develop reverence for the Lord. This is because the reverence aspect is going down. Too much familiarity is happening with the deities. Too much familiarity. That's the problem. Not only with the deities, with our spiritual master also this familiarity can come. Many times what happens, instead of really focusing deeply on, we think, sometimes what happens, our spiritual master may be very close to us or our specific families. Now because of that, we start thinking, I have a fantastic personal relationship with my spiritual master, so I can do anything with the Vaishnavas. After that, because after all, Maharaj is my man. We have a very personal relationship with him. He comes to our house. This is the kind of mentality, false ego, that can come in. We forget the basics of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is all about doing the basics correctly. It's not about how close, who is more physically close, or whose name spiritual master recollects top of the mind. It's not like that. It's not about physically being present in front of him all the time, taking photographs with him, or just, being in control of other devotees. Nobody, none of you can go to spiritual master through going through me only. I am the go-to man. You better be good to me. You be careful. I know you. This is the kind of attitude, right? We will get. So all the time we are serving him closely, but we have just not got it. We are just nowhere. We have just not understood anything. So Krishna is also taken casually. Spiritual master is also taken very, very casually. In fact, recently, Nityananda Priya Prabhu gave me a very wonderful point. We were having one discussion. And he told me that many times we forget the role of our spiritual master. The role of our spiritual master is that our spiritual master is our father. So, on one hand, we go to this extreme of being overly familiar. On the other hand, we go into extreme formality with him. But at the end of the day, the real relationship with the spiritual master, we have to understand that he is our spiritual father. When my father is sitting behind, I don't do every day, father. In the morning, if I go to him, he'll say, something wrong with you or what? Right? So yes, there are etiquettes required to the spiritual master, but we really have to understand that we have to take shelter of the spiritual master as much as we take shelter of our parents. Like when I have a problem, real issue, I trust him that he will tell me what is right for me. So that is the kind of relationship. So by constantly being in the mood of prayer, by constantly hearing, we will develop that personal, we will not forget that there is a person with whom we are interacting constantly. Because we are constantly taking shelter. We can take shelter only of a person, not of something which is impersonal. So we will constantly be reminded that yes, here is a person who is actually reciprocating with me. And when we are constantly reminded, then we also develop the love and affection to reciprocate with him as a person. This is what philosophically I understand, though I am also struggling with conditioning, so I am not following it. But I just attempt to answer for my own reminder. Okay, since time is 9:10, so I'll stop here. Yeah, please stop.
I have this query. Why great devotees like Sukadeva Goswami and the Kumaras first appeared as impersonalities? They were born from a great personality, great devotee of the Lord. But at first they were impersonalities.
Okay.
I think they're supposed to be personal because their fathers are great devotees, Lord.
Yes. What to speak of impersonal lists? You know, for example, there is, in one sense, we have to understand there is no relationship between a father and a son in the material sense. It's not necessary. If the father is a great devotee, the son will be. The other way is also not true. Most of our spiritual masters, fathers, were not devotees and are not devotees. But they are all Uttama Adhikaris, right? If you see. So there is no relationship like that. Neither can we be complacent saying that I am a devotee, so my son will also become a devotee. We cannot take that for granted. So that's the second part of the question. The first part of the question is, why then Sukadeva Goswami and four Kumaras, why they were impersonalists to begin with? That is because the Srimad Bhagavatam could be spoken. That is why that Atma Rama verse is very important. Atma Rama verse, if you really meditate, you know, if you read Srila Prabhupada's purports, Prabhupada's writing that even the most hardcore Mayavadi, when he really hears Krishna Leela, he gets attracted. Even the person who has nothing to do with sex desire, who has completely renounced. For example, who was that? Yamunacharya. Yamunacharya said, every time I hear or I listen about sex, my lips curl in disgust and I spit at the thought of sex. That's what Yamunacharya said. But the same Yamunacharya will constantly hear the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. That means the loving affairs of the Lord has got nothing to do with the mundane sex of this material world, right? So so this mood is explained to us by a pastime of people like Sukadeva Goswami or the four Kumaras, who were completely Atma Ramas. They were completely self-satisfied. And then when Sukadeva Goswami, who was a impersonalist, Sukadeva Goswami was an impersonalist, when he is walking away, then the pastimes of Lord Krishna, Vyasadeva is chasing him, and then he tells a verse about the pastime of Lord Krishna, and then even in that impersonal consciousness, when he hears that, he turns back and comes back to his father, and he only spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to us. So it is just to enhance this understanding for all of us, that's why these pastimes are there. The four Kumaras also, they go to Brahman. They go to Vaikuntha. They are already there in the outside Vaikuntha layer. They already realized Brahman. And then they have just smelt the tulsi at the feet of Lord Vishnu. When they smell that, immediately they go on hunting. And then they see the Lord's lotus feet. And they go and surrender there. Like that. Of course, Jai Vijay stop them, and there's a whole pastime which comes after that. But that is a mood. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jatra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Jai Nitya Gaur.